there's this whole continuum of people that when they think about doing the thing they do at work in a volunteerism setting, they either love that idea and they think that's really cool, or they're like, please do not make me go and do accounting in my volunteer time when I have to do accounting all day long.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. During July 2021, we step back from our usual guest interviews to focus on the mission of the Dan Smolin Experience, to help people find success and enjoyment and the work that they do and hope to do. We believe there are four career journey components that get people to blissful work and career experiences, and they are dream, explore, strategize, and act. First, we encourage people of all ages, backgrounds, and levels of education and training to dream about the work that they believe will make them happy and well-purposed. Next, we guide them to explore opportunities to do the work that they dream about. Then, we focus them to strategize, to align with the skill and experience needed to do the work and opportunities of their choosing. And last, we prod them to act, to seize on the opportunities to do the work of their dreams. We believe the key to success is intentionality, allowing dreams, explorations, strategies, and actions to happen fluidly. To truly be successful in the future of work, we must be career intentional about dreaming, exploring, strategizing, and acting throughout our lives. You can find useful and actionable podcast episodes and blog posts on dansmolin.com. Use the spyglass to search for content to dream, explore, strategize, and act. And when on the site, make sure you sign up for our free newsletter. Just click the newsletter tab on the top of our webpage, then click subscribe, and you will be on your way. In a dynamic future of work, agility is key, and our ever-changing dreams can help us align with future success. Lately, some workplace observers have criticized me for the tagline you hear at the conclusion of each podcast episode, "Our best days lie ahead." With pandemic restrictions eased, we are in the midst of the biggest workforce and workplace change in well over 100 years. And now, the typical career professional must strive to understand what new normal means, whether they office at home, remotely from some other venue, co-located at a traditional office, or day-to-day following a hybrid setup comprised of all of the above. This I know. Our time right now is ushering in dramatic changes in how and where we work, and hiring managers from Fortune 100 CEOs to small business operators must achieve some semblance of normality to get their enterprises humming again like they were pre-pandemic. Those of us who own agency as career professionals, who advocate for making work part of the day and not the entire day, who drive agility and flexibility in the work that we do, and who lead future of work, will help us all to achieve better, more productive, and happier lives during work and non-work hours. Revolutions are never pretty, But when we, as happy warriors, render all of the future of work goals present, then our best days do lie ahead. This, I am certain. Earlier this year, I met up with one of the happiest warriors in the future of work. She's Angela Parker, the CEO of Realized Worth. Angela leads an organization that inspires professionals at AT&T, Deloitte, Microsoft, Walmart, and other companies with meaningful volunteer program engagements. Volunteerism is a truly powerful tool, and Angela says that volunteering can be a safe and non-threatening space where we encounter our own humanity. 18 months separated from their workplace colleagues, millions of career professionals now seek involvement in meaningful leadership opportunities. Oftentimes, volunteerism is what gets them to meaningfulness. In this podcast interview, recorded during January 2021, Angela and I discuss how the pandemic changed volunteerism, the role skill plays in driving volunteer programs, ways that volunteerism helps people stay happy and engaged on the job, and how stakeholder value drives corporate social responsibility goals. Do give it a listen. So before we get started, I was wondering if you could tell me about your company, Realized Worth. What is that, and how do you provide value to your clients?
Yeah, I'd love to. So Realized Worth, we're a consulting firm. We've been around since 2008, and we help clients who have corporate volunteering and giving programs turn them into more measurable, more scalable, and more meaningful programs. That's kind of the pitch, but we'll talk a little bit more, I think, going forward about what we really do it for.
So talk to me about why so many professionals and companies are attracted to doing volunteer programs.
I don't know if they're drawn to volunteer programs, to volunteerism per se, but you know, companies respond to whatever noise their employees make. And employees, or I should just say people, just we can't bear meaningless lives, you know, and employees are asking for meaning. Mm-hmm. And I think companies they're responding with volunteerism, volunteer programs, civic engagement. There's a lot of different names for these programs. But the interesting thing that they're finding is that traditional volunteering, the way that a lot of us think about it as maybe just an event or an activity, is not a silver bullet. You know, people don't suddenly feel a sense of meaning by participating in one activity, even though that's what they're asking for and even though that's what companies are responding with. But we are seeing that when it's strategic, when it's employee-led, when it's transformative as opposed to transactional, it becomes something that begins to connect with people at their very core, you know, and it reminds them kind of who they are and why they care about their lives, their jobs, what they're doing, who they are in the world. And that leads to a lot of really interesting business benefits. And I think that's really what companies are drawn to about volunteerism.
When I've done volunteer programs in my past career acts, I often think of outdoor activities, planting mm-hmm. trees, cleaning up garbage, things like that. But the pandemic has forced a lot of people indoors. So how has that changed the act of volunteering?
This is one of those things where I don't know if you've heard about companies in this pandemic who are trying to go more digital. They had maybe a 10-year plan to get on track with the digital economy. And then all of a sudden it was just fast-tracked. It kind of feels that way with volunteerism to me. Obviously, everybody wants to be able to go out and do the stuff outdoors. They want to do everything you normally think of when you think of how you volunteered. But they've also been trying to figure out how to engage remote workforces and call centers and people that don't have access to those outdoor or regular activities. So this has fast-tracked the intention to go a little bit more virtual with volunteering. I think the problem that they've faced as they've been forced to go a little bit more virtual is finding that the nonprofit infrastructure isn't really there. You know, organizations, some of them were set up to receive virtual volunteers already. I think of places like Missing Maps or TutorMate, who are already all online. And they've gotten this huge influx of activity this year. And then organizations that were totally in-person, food banks and others like that, they're struggling to keep their strong volunteers and their corporate relationships and their donor partners. And I think that's where actually skills are a key component of all types of volunteering, whether it's virtual, in-person, whether it's defined as skills-based or not, employee volunteers are, they're trying to learn in this new virtual environment how to scope opportunities with nonprofits in a way that's a genuine partnership, and how to listen to them, and how to keep the organization's mission sort of balanced with what the company hopes to get out of it. Again, teaching interesting skills that come with trying to do things, not just in volunteerism virtually, but as a company more virtually. And so there's this need because of the pandemic for volunteer leaders to know how to do these things a little bit differently than they did before, and how to facilitate virtual teams. It's pretty resume worthy skills. Mm. And most people, I don't know about most people, but a lot of people were kind of bad at them before, but the pandemic has definitely forced this to the forefront. How are we going to do this in a way that's meaningful to nonprofits, that and that employees can actually facilitate in a meaningful way?
I imagine you get involved with the ideation where you sit down with your clients. Well, you can't sit down face to face, but on a Zoom call, and help them unpack the opportunity, right? I would imagine part of your skill set is getting them engaged so that it goes beyond strategy into actual tactical plan and campaign plan. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have to be thinking about all of those things. And then how it, like I said earlier, can scale and be strategic and even contribute to what the company wants overall.
So let's talk about skill. I think about volunteerism on a higher level, and I think about skill-based volunteerism. And we talked in pre-interview about Deloitte. I'm very familiar with the Deloitte program because they deploy people with a lot of financial and consulting skill in the field to use those math skills to help people who perhaps don't have financial literacy or have been indigent and need very basic money skills to not spend money on drugs and alcohol, but actually on saving money so that they can build a life for themselves. So that's skill-based, but that's not all of volunteerism. And I would imagine that can also mean developing your own skills if you don't have them, and using volunteerism as you just said, a resume builder. I'm wondering if you could help the audience unpack the difference between the two.
This is a very interesting question for me to talk with professionals about, because there's this whole continuum of people that when they think about doing the thing they do at work in a volunteerism setting, they either love that idea and they think that's really cool, or they're like, please do not make me go and do accounting in my volunteer time when I have to do accounting all day long. So it's an interesting balance depending on people, where people are in what I tend to refer to as their volunteer journey. Right. They're really going to respond to that one way or the other. In our experience, companies can get a little bit obsessed with both types of skills-based volunteering that you mentioned. It's just easier to sell to the C-suite because it's easier to say, we're going to get business benefits from this program when it's skills-based. Easier to say that than when you're referring to more traditional types of volunteering or civic engagement. So the type you described at Deloitte tends to be purpose-oriented, huge company trend lately, talking about being a purpose-driven company. And that's using the skills you already use at work for good. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies will refer to that as pro bono volunteering, similarly to how lawyers will use pro bono time to contribute to the community. This is, in our experience, typically about trying to inspire employees to see how meaningful their skills can be to other people, and then also give them sort of a non-threatening environment where they can hone their skills. So they're still developing and growing by doing this thing out there in the community. But the other type, which was using volunteering to develop new skills and grow as leaders, that one is a given. I mean, I think it should be a given. If your volunteering and giving program as a company is strategic to any degree, all of that kind of volunteering should be framed to develop skills and raise up leaders. And having said that, it's also important, I think, to offer like a first stage space. We'll talk about the three stages of the volunteer journey. A first stage space is where anybody who's never experienced volunteerism to any degree before can just show up, see, discover volunteering for the first time, and decide if it's even their thing. And then from there, companies can provide levels of volunteering that help employees progress, you know, help them further discover and commit and develop those skills. But you really want to have volunteer programs with those options, whether it's getting to know the program for the first time, getting to know the idea of volunteering for the first time, developing skills and developing as a leader. And again, I think all types of volunteering, even if you're planting trees, needs to have elements of leadership development, project management, guiding others, public speaking, looking for how to develop others out there in the field, things that make great managers, that all needs to be worked into a strategic program. And then you can go all the way from there to pro bono volunteering, to people that are highly committed over a long period of time to pretty intensive volunteering where they use their skills out there in the community like Deloitte does.
So I want to talk about how skill development can retain a workforce. I've worked for organizations, I've had clients as a recruiter for organizations that have retention problems. Because of the nature of the core work, people either burn out, flame out, or rust out, or they get a better job. But can volunteerism be used to encourage people to stay and build their careers within the company? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think there is so much opportunity there for volunteerism to be its own growth track within the company, to be a way that employees get seen by other departments, other managers, higher level senior leaders that they don't typically get seen by, to allow their direct managers to see them do things, do activities that they don't do in their normal jobs in volunteering that their manager can then realize, oh, they're actually really good at a thing that isn't part of their job and therefore they can be promoted in this role. So in terms of retention, meaning growth track, people need to have a sense of who can I become in this company. Volunteerism can be the thing that does that when there's nowhere else to help people see that track within the company. And then it can also be the thing, and is so often the thing, that creates a sense of effective commitment. Meaning a lot of people have a sense of commitment to their company because they're paid enough that they don't want to try and go get paid that much at another company, or it's just too much trouble to leave. But we want to get to where people feel an emotional connection with their companies, where they feel better about who they are because of what the company gave them the opportunity to do in the community. And they think, I will be at this place always because of who they make me feel I am, who they believe I am. The way we see ourselves in a company is the thing that keeps us there. So that part is huge. And that, again, has everything to do with how strategic the volunteering program is and how it's framed for those employee leaders within the program. I don't want to pretend like it's a silver bullet. Just because you have a volunteerism program doesn't mean it's going to lead to retention, but a strategic program with specific measurement, specific tracking in place absolutely can get you there.
Years ago, when I ventured into the clean and green space as a recruiter, one of the challenges that I had was finding people that actually had the core skills. So oftentimes I would talk to people that I was recruiting in the past or were prospects, and they would say to me, I don't know how to get into that kind of work. And I would say, you have to create a volunteer structure for yourself and either invent a project that you're going to do on the side to give yourself, you know, the resume points, or you go to your boss and say, will you sponsor me? Was I right to recommend that to my candidates?
You know, I don't know if you were right, but I will say I tell people the exact same thing, whether it's in their companies, literally in their volunteer programs, or finding a way to volunteer themselves on their own, just like you described. In fact, I will use my stepdaughter as an example right now, Alyssa Jarvis. She is so interested in being a D&I expert in the CSR space. That is her dream. That is her passion. And she can't find that space right now in her career. So she's begun on her own a couple times a week, creating 2-minute videos for LinkedIn to force herself to learn and force herself to talk about what's important to her and create a network. There's so much opportunity to do that kind of thing, to create your own brand, to learn what you need to learn. Again, whether it's inside a volunteer program at a company, which would be a brilliant thing for companies to build into their programs to allow their employees to do, build your brand, create a network, get expert in what you want to be an expert in, and then to do it on your own too, to create your own volunteer opportunity to drive your career. I think that's brilliant.
So we talk a lot on this podcast about localism. It's the movement away from DC, around away from the federal government, and to localities where decisions actually get made, where money gets spent and infrastructure gets created and action gets created and happens. Does volunteerism happen at the localist level most often? Or does it happen like, for instance, there's a tornado and somebody calls the American Red Cross to volunteer, and then they get involved in broader programs that aren't necessarily locally based? Can you comment on that?
Yeah, you know, I think this question gets to some of the way people define volunteerism. A lot of companies have started to expand beyond the word volunteerism because our minds so quickly go to the few paradigms we're familiar with when it comes to volunteering, the traditional food banks and the regular runs and things that people get involved with, disasters, like you just mentioned, where people will galvanize because we're all shocked by something that has shaken our lives and that we have empathy for. But going beyond that to pro-social behavior, to civic engagement, to driving social movements is when you get to something I think that's a little bit more along the lines of localism, where you can, you know, quote, to use the phrase, make a difference in a way that actually does dismantle systemic oppression, for example.
Right.
When you're looking at what does it mean not just to go out there and do a thing one day because there was a crisis, or because there was a disaster, or because my friends asked me to be involved in a fundraiser one weekend, but because I want to become the kind of person who is civically engaged in a way that drives social movements, then what does that look like? What are the people and the social issues in my community where I need to go and be face to face, shoulder to shoulder with people who may or may not be like me, so we can challenge assumptions and move forward and actually drive the change that cannot happen at a policy level, but has to happen at a heart level.
So 50 years ago, this year, I guess, there was this famous opinion piece in the New York Times written by Dr. Milton Friedman, who was an economist. You know where I'm going with this, that he famously said the social responsibility of business is to make money for its shareholders, basically. And that was a thumb in the nose to anybody in the environmental movement who said, you know, we got to do better than that. And really recently, the idea of stakeholder value has been on par with shareholder value and in some cases eclipsed shareholder value. And I'm wondering if you're seeing that in your line of work.
Yeah, it's a great reference, great quote. I will match you in your Friedman quote and quote Spider-Man.
Ah!
Great power comes great responsibility.
Right.
I think this is now, whether it was then or not, this is now the role and the responsibility of companies and society. There is no greater influence, there is no greater influence on the day-to-day lives of human beings than the place they work, the place they try to earn money, or the way they try to sustain their lives. Every day, massive corporations are influencing the way people vote, the way politics go, the way we are cared for in our day-to-day neighborhoods, and the way people feel when they go home, the way they treat their families. There is a massive responsibility that comes with that kind of influence on individuals. So if you want to affect your shareholders, if you want to profit and benefit society that way, it is simply blindness to not also see that the profit we're talking about goes beyond the dollar now. Again, whether or not it did when Friedman was talking about this, now we are talking about a society that is dependent on the well-being of its people, and well-being has always been more than the dollar.
The backdrop of that op-ed in the New York Times was a massive oil spill off of Catalina Island in California.
Yes.
And he was so strident in his opinion. And we look back at that now and say, that's absolutely ridiculous. How could somebody feel that way? But, you know, maybe we're in a better place now. I do have one more question to ask you, Angela, and it has to do with something you brought up in pre-interview. You said one of the missions you have is to help people who work to volunteer better. Hmm. What does that mean, to volunteer better?
So thinking back to what I mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, whether wherever you are in the world, whether you're cleaning houses, which is how I started my career as an entrepreneur, or leading a company, whether you're 22 or 62, whether you're rich or poor, we human beings, we have very little tolerance for meaninglessness. We wake up in the middle of the night thinking, is this it? Is this my life? And volunteering, when it's done better than so much volunteering and corporate volunteering is done, can be a safe and non-threatening space where we encounter our own humanity, where we sit across the table from, let's say, a person experiencing homelessness who doesn't contribute to the GDP, and who often doesn't have the right to vote or participate in society the way the rest of us do, and who is told every day, get off my stoop, get out of my way, go get a job. And when we sit across from them, we realize as we serve them food and listen to their stories that we are the same, that I could be you and you could be me, and maybe my value is not actually measured by my title or what kind of car I drive or how thin I am or how I'm, you know, on time or late to every meeting. These things we measure ourselves by every day. When we go to places and interact with people that challenge our assumptions about other people, groups, and social issues, we begin to develop empathy. Our brains literally begin to change the synaptic pathways in our brains, and we wrestle with our inherent value. And gradually we start making decisions based on the value of our shared humanity, as opposed to the value society assigns us. And that sounds big, and it is, but volunteering has this potential, but only when it is taken that seriously. We have to do it better. We have to assume that companies who have corporate volunteering programs must be driving social movements with those programs. Anything less is not good enough.
We are definitely at a do something moment between COVID and everything else going on in the world. I thank you so much for your time, Angela. This has really been a delight. And I think 2021 is going to be a great year for you and Realize Worth. For somebody listening to this podcast, where would you point them to discover your social media?
Realize Worth. Everything we have is titled Realize Worth, realizeworth.com, Realize Worth Twitter handle. Just do a quick Google search. You'll find us.
Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Dan. Great to be here.
Links to Realize Worth's social media are included in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Meantime, if you haven't done so, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you get them, or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. And please take a moment to positively rate and comment wherever you listen to the podcast, because that helps us to connect with new listeners. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.